New Galaxy Broadcasting proudly presents Integrative Hermetic Health with Hugo Rodier, MD. In this program, we explore a powerful new paradigm for health from the standpoint of integrative medicine. In his practice, Dr. Rodier integrates the ancient Hermetic art and the enduring role of food as medicine with modern nutrition, but also allowing for the wide range of important health practices, including truly valuable medical discoveries, chiropractic, acupuncture, homeopathic and herbal medicine. In this program, Hugo Rodier, an expert in intestinal health and nutrition, will help the audience discover an approach that focuses on actual cures, not the masking of the elegant simplicity of many health solutions for the sake of profit. Profit too long has been an overriding motive of the pharmaceutical companies, and sometimes, sadly, by many in the medical establishment today.
Well, Hugo, good to see you again.
Thanks for having me, Johnny.
You know, we haven't been on the air for a little bit of time, and I think it's perhaps appropriate to go over some of the things for our newer listeners about integrative medicine and the many ramifications it has for you, which I think are probably more than the average integrative medical practitioner, as well as certainly more than the average medical physician. Anyway, so as I understand it, Hugo, you are actually an immigrant. You came here from Chile, is that correct?
That's right.
And your father was from France originally, is that true?
French extraction. He was born in Chile.
Oh, he was born in Chile, I see. But you yourself, you don't just know English, you also know Spanish and French and anything else besides...
A little bit of Russian.
Uh-huh. So... What I really like about your background is that it's not just, you know, a career. It's like it encompasses sort of like a search for truth, for meaning. It goes far beyond what a lot of people who are in any profession usually do, because it has a great deal of concern for humanity and for truth. Anyway, but I am curious, you did get your Bachelor of Science in Zoology. So I guess you must have liked animals at a certain point, right?
Exactly. And I thought that was a way to prepare for medicine, although I would have done it differently. If I had investigated the issue better, I would have taken English, history, public health, things like that. But back then, I didn't have any guidance in the 70s, pre-med guidance, so... I just went with what I saw other people doing. I should say, Johnny, that your intro is just fantastic. I've never had other radio hosts get to the crux of the matter. I have not been guided in my pursuit of my professional career just by dry medical scientific facts. It's about a quest for truth. And so truly, truly, I feel like my preparation has been truly integrative in that it has been more than, like I said, scientific facts, but philosophical facts, theological facts, anthropology facts, a total quest for truth, even economical facts, because I see a lot of physicians on both sides of the fence being driven by money and profits. And so I'm even a consumer advocate when I try to get people to understand health in all its ramifications. I should also say, for those who are wondering about my syntax and grammar, that I grew up trilingual and tricultural, and throwing a little bit of Basque from the Pyrenees.
Cause oh, really?
My mom's father was Basque.
Ah.
So I think that contributed to a more eclectic approach to life, especially after immigrating from Chile to Idaho in high school. So my education has been, for the most part, well, 99% in the United States. And for that, I'm very grateful. And it has given me that universal approach to searching. And so I thank you for having picked up on that.
Well, I'm really glad to, because of, you know, you've been involved in many different programs with me. Actually, this is your, besides this particular category of program, which we started a little bit of time ago, we did other programs too. And I was always amazed at your breadth of understanding of things. And I do believe that being trying to be myself an integrated person, that a lot of those interests of yours are very, very key to understanding what reality is all about. And that should be a part of medicine, as it was probably a long time ago. Why don't you explain, before we get into a lot of other things, your interest in ancient medicine?
Well, yeah, thank you very much. It turns out that the ancients understood that health was more than just how the body functions, but a total balance. In fact, another name for health that they used was beauty, balance, homeostasis.
Right.
And so the best physicians, if you will, were priests, were people who understood everything about the human condition. And it wasn't until 150 years ago that medicine began to lose all that. And of course, the great physician William Osler, mm-hmm. warned about that about 120 years ago, that we were becoming too scientific. Now, having said that, I have to really emphasize that, of course, we want to be scientific, but we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater and forget about the human heart and history and politics and economics. You mentioned that we did some political shows.
Yes.
Well, guess what? History, philosophy, religion is written by the winners. And so we have to look at the state of affairs right now in the modern world. Why is medicine the way it is? Because it's controlled by the winners, people with money. And people are beginning to realize that we have lost that ancient tradition of medicine. In fact, the Lancet 20 years ago had a great article about this. And the title of the article was a mouthful, Ereditastica, which is an African word to say missing that which has been lost. And what has been lost is a hermetic approach to medicine. Think of the Caduceus. Hermes, the god of medicine, if you will, held the Caduceus in his hand, which is now a symbol of the medical profession. And the depth and breadth of the Caduceus symbology is astounding. I wrote an entire book about this. But the short of it is that when we understand nature, of the nature of reality, man, and God, we begin to see how we can heal at the most fundamental level. And for that, it involves energy and information, which is corroborated by modern physics. Turns out that the two snakes of the Caduceus represent exactly that, energy and information, the very pillars of reality, according to physicists. But the ancients didn't call it energy and information. They called it strength and wisdom. And the staff in the middle around which the two snakes curl is balance or beauty or health or homeostasis. And so, yeah, your question about the roots of understanding from the ancients, it's amazing to me. And it's so arrogant to presume that because we got ourselves a microscope and we figured out DNA, that the ancients didn't know what they were talking about. In fact, the very image of the Caduceus recalls DNA, the curling, spiraling DNA molecule, if you look at a picture of the Caduceus. And so many writers feel that the ancients hermetically, that's another use for the word Hermes, hermetically referred to these truths in a hermetic way, meaning keeping a secret, because they don't want the riffraff to, what's the word, they don't want to throw pearls to pigs, if you will.
Well, when you see a lot of the sort of conspiratorial people online have taken things like the practices of masonry and other and Kabbalistic things, and they have actually inverted them.
Exactly.
that's an example of some of these terrible practices that these people are involved in are basically inverted imitations of spiritual practices. And there's another thing I'd like to say, is that a lot of times people associate these days spirituality with faith-based spirituality. And I don't think that that's exactly what Hermetic medicine was about. And I include in that various types of alchemy. I think it was more experiential. It was faith that there could be an answer, and they look for the answer, and if they find the answer, it becomes part of the sort of archive of what they know, or the inventory of what they know and what they can practice.
Wonderful, Johnny. I totally agree. For Christians out there, you know, they might think, hey, what are these guys talking about? We're talking about how Christ in the Bible taught to the masses And then he told the disciples the true philosophies, the more occult, the more mysterious, the more hermetic meanings of his message under in closed doors. And that's not to say that he was an elitist, no, but he knew full well human nature. He knew that very dynamic and powerful doctrines are understood, as you said, experientially in the quietness of the human heart. And if you get there, great, more power to you. But to get there, one has to be totally committed to truth and leave the ego at the door, which are tall orders. Most people cannot do it. And I'm not saying I did it or you did it. No, we're all looking. But you and I, Johnny, understand the symbology that's there, like the Kadushas.
So very detailed, very, very detailed information that's useful.
Right. So who's going to get it? Well, those who are truly motivated. If you start to get taken over by the dark side of the force, if you get my drift,
yeah,
by mm-hmm. money, by profit, by honor, by power, et cetera, et cetera, you're going to get sidetracked, and then you deserve everything you get. Now, I'm not saying that one cannot turn from the dark path. Of course we can. It's not an easy path to follow, and the more one is committed to truth and the more we leave the ego at the door, the more likely we are to truly understand what the masters have said about this and what they meant to convey by their hermetic symbols.
I do want to say one other point is that a lot of times when in the different religions of the world where there's a fundamental teaching by the teacher, when that teaching is converted into words, it often becomes the custodian of the winners, which often are the priesthood,
exactly.
Who are often aligned with, they have their own agenda, and that agenda is often in the past concerned with the monarchy and the empire and so forth. Well, we're going to have to take a break, which is exciting, so I can give a little bit more time to think about this, and we will be right back with the Integrative Hermetic Health Show. This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. If you're an author and want your novel adapted to the screen or to the new high-quality TV series developed by Amazon, Hulu, and Netflix, for example, I probably can help. My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a media content company, and I've worked on a number of adaptations, including a dramatic version of ventriloquist Paul Winchell's autobiography, an adaptation of a novel co-authored by myself and a Korean War veteran, an historical account of the Mexican Art Revolution, a science fiction screenplay based on a fictional novel account of fallen angels, and many other proprietary and client-based projects. We want our projects to be with high-quality potential and positive intent. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form.
Boots in Manhattan is a coming-of-age novel by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. It is about a young Tom Boots Raymond who grows up in New York in the 1940s, who was a member of a street gang.
My friends and I were about to start our own game of stickball when Rabbit Lacey, the head of the Rattlers, came up to us and tried to move in on our game. We were called dwarves, the youngest members of this stupid gang.
Hey, Kevin, I need you to get some gloves and some stuff I left at my place.
No, this is our game.
Hey, are you my good little dwarf or what?
You've been calling me a dwarf since I was 6. We're not your personal slaves, pal.
Hey, what is this? A dwarf rebellion? All right, big guy. We ditch the dwarf thing. We make you guys regular rattlers.
No, it's too late.
He looked at Jay and me. We looked away. Rabbit was now angry, and he pushed Kevin hard with the palms of his hands. Kevin tried to ram him in the stomach, but he stepped aside, throwing Kevin into the curb where he fell to the ground, bleeding profusely at the knee. Still, he managed to get up.
My street.
Kevin shouted at Rabbit, pointing at him with an angry index finger.
Find out more by Googling Boots in Manhattan, a 1940s coming-of-age novel, part one of the novel series The Foot Soldier by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle. That's Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle.
Now here's a song by Lightstorm called Awareness, which is a beautiful ode to the highest levels of consciousness.
It's a goal. Love feeds the soul. Awareness. Conscious awareness. Awareness. Blissful awareness.
We're back with Dr. Hugo Rodier, who is a medical doctor and an integrative physician with a family practice in Utah. Tell us a little bit about your background as you became a medical doctor. I know you didn't stay as a zoologist. So how did that evolve? You had actually wanted to be in that was actually like your idea of pre-med, right, in a sense.
Right. I had very little pre-medical advice in college. We're not going to say what colleges those were. But at first, I wanted to be a psychologist. I felt the mind was the most powerful thing about a human being. And back in those days, in the 70s, psychology wasn't that great. I thought all my teachers and the students were all crazy trying to figure themselves out. Maybe I was there for the same reason. So I was very disappointed after 2 years of psychology. But, you know, it served me well because then I switched to medicine, thinking that health was the most important person and most important thing in a person's life. And so from pre-med, I went to medical school at the University of Utah and then specialty family medicine for 3 years. And then I subspecialized subspecialized shortly after that in nutrition. And that led to how important nutrition is at the cellular level, but also for the state of the microbiome, our gut bacteria.
Well, that in those days, when then you started to be interested in nutrition, it wasn't really an integrative, I'm not sure about this, an integrative practice, right, at that time? I mean,
there were some national leaders who were not well respected, if you will. And we're talking 30, 35 years ago.
Yeah.
The fact that when I began to talk nutrition, people would tell me that that was quackery, that there was no evidence that nutrition had anything to do with health. Can you imagine that?
I nearly died from nutritional ignorance. I certainly do.
Right. And so, but it wasn't until 2001 when things began to turn. And this is because of a landmark book published by the National Institute of Medicine called Crossing the Quality Chasm, which anybody can read, where good cutting-edge scientists and researchers or educators slammed the medical system saying it's broken. And things began to change. I would say now that we are in the golden age of nutrition, the microbiome, how important the gut bacteria is. Back in those days when I first started, I was worried that patients would not get it. I had to arm wrestle most of them to understand these simple things. But now, let me just give you an example.
Sure.
The other day, I saw the chief nurse of a major institution coming to see me paying cash on the barrel instead of going through her own insurance system because she's so fed up with a broken system. Then I made a phone call to another insurance company complaining about all the papers they send me. I said, hey, listen, I don't take insurance anymore, so quit sending me crap. And so I was a bit irritated. And the lady on the other side of the phone working for the insurance company says, oh, I don't blame you. It's so broken, so broken. Their own employees. And so, Johnny, what 40 years ago was quackery, right now, even their own institution and patients are beginning to see that integrative health is the future of healthcare, if not the present. And let me just explain something so that if people are still wondering what integrative medicine is.
Sure.
Let's start from the bottom. Those are the primary care providers, family practitioners, internal medicine, pediatricians, obstetrics, psychiatrists. All those people see the whole person for the most part. But they get overwhelmed with a lot of colds, a lot of sniffles and skin rashes and little things. So the minute they get overwhelmed, they punt to a specialist who takes Humpty Dumpty apart as if the heart didn't have anything to do with the kidneys and the kidneys with the liver and the liver with the skin and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And so patients get totally taken apart and get treatment, mostly pharmaceutical, that only addresses the symptoms. And so that's where the integrative doctor comes in. He or she puts Humpty Dumpty back together again, as the primary care doctor would have done had she or him had enough time to do so. That's what an integrative doctor is.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you another part of this question because, I mean, you said you read this book, but, I mean, what got you specifically so focused on nutrition?
Well, I would like to say I read this and that, but it was, pun intended, a gut feeling.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Even before medical school, I felt that, hey, you know, you are what you eat. And, you know, again, go back to the ancients, Hippocrates, the best medicine is food.
Right.
And so these are very basic ideas, you know, that just got lost because the winners have written the history of medicine.
Yeah. And the history of spirituality. And the history of history.
Yeah, food for thought.
Well, you know, one of the other aspects of this is, and I remember this because back then, when you were doing that stuff, just a little bit later after you graduated and so forth in the 90s.
No, I graduated in 84.
No, I'm talking about myself now.
Oh.
I said later, a little bit later than after you had, you know, graduated. I did some health shows. And there was still tremendous resistance about it. I mean, I did have a doctor on. She was very much involved in holistic medicine, but not completely. And she was, you know, it was called complementary medicine at that time. So at least some people called it that, alternative medicine. Complementary medicine would be combining alternative medicine with conventional practice. But it was still like not really that cool. And the fact that I had gotten over really serious conditions by, you know, going into nutrition made me wanted to pay back what had been given me by having a health show. And so I did. And it was very interesting to be there then. Now it's different, right? I mean, you guys are becoming heroes. I mean, publicly in a way, right?
Yes. But it's worth noting that even this movement can be tainted by profit. So we see on the integrative side a lot of clinics popping up where they're driven by profit. So remember, at the beginning I said that I get into politics and economics as well, because that should be part of a true integrative approach to life and patients. And so a whole lot of these so-called integrative clinics get into excessive hormonal treatment and testing,
right?
Excessive supplementation, excessive this and that. And I'm not saying there's not a place for those modalities, but when patients are not taught very basic simples of nutrition to empower them, I see a problem with that. For instance, the greatest example is to energy manipulation. You see a lot of energy workers who will cure you, and the cures are dramatic just by working with energy issues, either some machine or touching or whatever. And I'm not saying those things don't work, but tell me, Johnny, after you get this miraculous cure and you go back and you start eating Twinkies again, how long will that cure work?
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
Exactly. Now, big example is excessive hormonal treatment. You know, hormones are not supposed to be jacked up to the max until we die. They peter out for a reason. And, of course, there are some boundaries where people will need replacement. Totally true. But when you walk in these clinics and every patient gets testosterone and thyroid or estrogen and all this and that, I see a problem with that. I think we need to be more judicious and not get into those modalities that are there really, really, if you really look into it, to increase revenues. And so as we go into this new world of integrative health, I think you need to look for a physician who's not into profits and who will keep things simple, direct, and mostly nutrition-based.
Well, I just want to say one more thing before our break, which is you were talking about how people run to a specialist. And I think they're encouraged to go to a specialist in a way. And specialists make a lot more money and charge a lot more for services which are not integrated.
Right.
And so I think that's another part of the economics of today, which
needs to be
modulated. I'm going to take a break now, Hugo, and we'll be right back.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television, or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you.
Are you confused about so much information on health issues? Do you find it hard to trust the sources of conflicting advice? Try Dr. Rodier's newsletters and blogs based on the latest information published in the best medical and nutritional journals. There's no charge for subscribing. Just log on to HugoRodier.com. That's HugoRodier.com to do so, or to download Dr. Rodier's latest publications. Hi, this is Johnny Bluestar. I'm assisting Dr. Hugo Rodier in his program on integrative hermetic health. And we had been talking about Hugo relating the problems with the overuse of specialty practices with a lot of people who are patients. Maybe you could expand on that.
Yes. It turns out that in medical school, we're taught, and public health researchers will confirm this, we need 20% of specialists and 80% primary care doctors. Mm-hmm. But it's totally backwards. So we're graduating 80% specialists and 20% primary care doctors. Why? Because of the money. Turns out the specialists make more money, and so a whole lot of graduates are steep in debt, and they want to pay it off quickly. And they might not be able to do it on the lesser wages of primary care doctors. So this creates a vicious incentive, perverse incentives, where it perpetuates the over-testing, the over-treating that we see with specialists. Now, having said that, we do need specialists, 20% of them. But when you got 80% of doctors becoming specialists, you can see that people will get excessive testing and excessive treatments.
And now a song by Stephanie Slevin, which is a tribute to a famous blues singer, one of her idols. Stephanie Slevin in this song pays tribute to Robert Johnson in a song called Gifted.
They say you're gifted. You must have got your gifts from the devil. Your lyrics uplifted, because they're on the new level. Look to the left, look to the right. There's a devil on my shoulder, or is he hiding from sight? Gifted, you must have made a pact with the devil. Your lyrics uplifted, could I not have got them from heaven? What's wrong with you? Can't you see my gifts are from God? They say got your gifts from the devil. Your lyrics uplifting because they're on a new level. What's wrong with you? I've waited so long. My gifts are from God, and my name is Robert Johnson.
You know, I found a paradigm that's interesting to me because it applies to many different things. But let's talk about economics. So there's one kind of, the kind of economics that's generally thought of as being appropriate in our culture is what I call competitive economics. Like you might say, like competitive medicine, where there is a difference. Some people make more money than other people, but they don't want everything on their, all the marbles on their side. So I call, when you want all the marbles on your side, when you want all the money, I call that predatory economics or predatory medicine. And then if you really want to know the truth, which is really perfect for what integrative medicine is, I would say there's cooperative economics, which doesn't really exist very often. It does in certain communities, what you call intentional communities, what we used to call communes, and some other places in the world are more cooperative. But when you have these countries warring with each other, you know, with trade wars and things like that, and businesses basically trying to get all the marbles and getting oligopolies and monopolies and all this, that kind of psychology, non-cooperative psychology, is just rampant in our whole culture. And it filters out in this aspect of things, which is really one of the most important things there is in life, your health, like you were saying.
Absolutely. In fact, this was addressed, I'm sure, many times, but the article I recall came out in the journal Scientific American, the cover issue, saying that it's all about cooperation, not competition. Yes, we do see examples of competition, and Darwin was sort of misled into that paradigm, not realizing that nature is mostly about cooperation. Uh-huh. But let's get ancient here. Let's get to the nitty gritty. Okay. The ancients understood this. They talked about competition and cooperation needing to be in balance. So they had strength, two snakes, strength and wisdom. You can think of strength as competition, cooperation as wisdom. You can think of competition as male and cooperation as female.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why it's so telling. So remarkably telling that a whole lot of medical associations throughout the country, state associations and all that, are abandoning the caduceus, the two snakes in balance, for the Asclepius, Hermes messenger, who has only one snake, meaning that they're too heavily tilted towards competition, strength, the male-driven approach to life, totally neglecting cooperation, the feminine, the wisdom, and that's why we're in so much trouble in a nutshell.
Well, you know, I don't know many people who practice that. Like, for instance, I don't know many political figures who seem to be tilted towards the masculine these days, like our friend, the current president of the United States, whose attitude towards women, towards practically everything,
It's totally male, right.
It's totally male, and there's an occasional deference to some kind of positive feeling. I mean, he will even have situations where he becomes very friendly with China. He's kind of trying to be friendly with Putin, and he winds up, and the European Union, and it winds up that he turns against them because he's really into the power trip, you know.
Yeah,
and that's that same paradigm, but that
exactly,
that, but that it's political still, paradigm.
It's like, mm-hmm. It's like the French say, you know, plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. The more things change, the more they are the same, or there's nothing new under the sun.
Right.
So the ancients knew that we were always going to be driven by power, by the golden rule. he who has the gold rules.
Yeah.
And so it's been a struggle since the dawn of civilization to have wisdom be balanced with strength. Not to say that there haven't been cultures and isolated communities where the feminine took precedence. Yeah, there have been. But geez, we forgot, didn't we?
Yeah, and it is, you know, it's a cultural disease that affects everything. And
exactly.
Right now, I'm ashamed of things that are happening in our country. And one of those main things that I'm ashamed of is the way they play games with the health, you know, the health situation. And even if they didn't play games with the current health thing, and you had like Medicare for all, what is the quality of care that's really being delivered with the current medical situation and medical research being what it is? What needs to be corrected to make things more balanced?
Excellent approach, because that's what I see missing in the debate about healthcare. We keep arguing how to finance a broken system.
Exactly.
It's like going to the car dealership and you see this car sitting on cinder blocks and you start haggling about the price. How dumb is that?
Yeah, it's just really, it's become this whole thing, you know, is another part of it is privatizing everything, you know, so that's one of the things that they don't like. That's really one of the things they don't like about Medicare. They want to privatize everything, even if you have thousands, millions of people without anything. And then now that they have something, what do they have? They have a pharmaceutically driven sort of medical practice, right? In a lot of ways.
Which only treats symptoms. It doesn't address the root issues of disease, which are energy and information or food.
Well, it does address the creative aspect to have substances for medicine that have as many side effects as they do. And the law protects us by having people on swings and having picnics while they're talking about the horrible side effects of these medicines.
Well, sure. You know, most of their pharmaceuticals research funds, no, 90% of it goes to dinners and trips for doctors, and they call it research because they will ask the doctor, hey, what do you think about this? Well, they've already made up their minds. So then they can say, most doctors agree with us, and they call it research. No, it's just whining and dining physicians. It's been calculated that pharmaceuticals spend about $2,000 a year per doctor in research, quote unquote.
Well,
so do the math. See where the bread is buttered. I mean, this is just pure, simple economics. You know, when we start talking economics, you know, I've taken health administration at the master's level at Washington University in St. Louis. And I love Smith. You know, we all quote the invisible, totally agree with it. But they never, hardly ever anyone quotes a corollary to what Smith said. He said that the invisible hand has to be regulated because left to itself, it will collude with other invisible hands, other buttered hands, and fix prices to screw the public. And so, look, I'm not saying the answer is government here, because that connotes a whole lot of emotional responses. What I'm talking about is balance, a balance where we do honor the drive for profits. But let's make it the triple bottom line, as cutting-edge economists are saying. The triple bottom line being profits, social, and environmental responsibility.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. I believe in prosperity, and I believe in being, you know, I just believe that there's been a tremendous inversion in many different aspects and fields, and that is based on a certain kind of greed. And if that isn't eliminated, we're just digging a very deep hole, like this trade, you know, this, I'm not saying, I meant the recent desire of Trump to back off of the nuclear arms treaty with Russia, which would propel us into a gigantic arms race with nuclear weapons that we're not supposed to use because they'll destroy us, but we'll take billions and billions of dollars away from everything else. But a lot of people get rich. So,
well, it's the same paradigm where we're driven by strength, by competition, with no balance from cooperation, from wisdom. So I'm really hard to argue with because I always see the other point, the strength point and the wisdom point. It's not who's right, who's wrong, but can we work together? Can we balance these things? Can we find the beauty in cooperation, that middle pillar between strength and wisdom, between competition and cooperation? If we don't, yeah, it happens the way you're describing, which is what we see in just about every society, where we're consumed by the male strength element. And it's no accident that we use that word for tuberculosis, consumption, and right. What's overconsumption causing to the world, to the planet. We're being consumed just as if we were riddled with tuberculosis without the mitigating hand of wisdom, of cooperation, of social and environmental responsibility.
Well, I hope that in our next program, we will continue to try to serve that mitigating hand of wisdom instead of that predatory hand of greed and selfishness. So thank you for this program. I'm just very honored to be able to work with you.
Thank you, Johnny, and we'll see you soon.
We'll see you soon.
This is Johnny Bluestar, host of Inalienable and Free, the Voice of the Coalition, a program devoted to the development of the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment. The Coalition is a unique project designed to empower its members both individually and collectively. Besides individual empowerment, its broader focus is on the restoration, protection, and enhancement of citizen and human rights throughout the world through the aid of its members. As this project is centered in the United States, our first task is to create a website and social network infrastructure to promote collective efforts to take back our rightful control as citizens over our government as designed by our founding fathers. Although we must begin with a social network restricted to United States citizens, the organization will also host a global dialogue for the discussion of human rights by citizens of democratic nations throughout the world. If you're interested, please check us out in the GoFundMe.com website, entering in the search field, the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment. That is, go to GoFundMe.com and enter in the search field, the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment. For more information about Dr. Rodier's practice, books, blogs, and newsletters, contact Hugo Rodier, MD, at www.hugorodier.com. That's HUGORODIER.com. We will go out with Patricia Welch's version of The Wind Beneath My Wings, a song that had many versions. The most well-charted version was in 1988 by Betty Midler. Still, I wonder if there's any version really better than what you're about to hear from Patricia Welch.
It must have been cold there in my shadow. Never have sunlight on your face. You were content to let me shine. That's your way. You always walked a step behind. So I was the one with all the glory, the one with all the strength. A beautiful face without a name for so long. A beautiful smile to hide the pain. Did you ever know that you're my hero? Beneath my wings. It might have appeared to go unnoticed, but I've got it all here in my heart. I want you to know, I know the truth, of course I know. I would be nothing without you. Did you ever know that you're my hero? And everything I would like to be. And I can fly higher than an eagle. 'Cause you are the wind. Yes, you are the wind beneath my wings.
I think